Welcome to this special edition episode of the Equine Affair podcast. This podcast is your inside look at everything to do with Equine Affair, from special events to exclusive interviews with top equine professionals and a whole lot more. I am your host, Allison Renborg, and today my guest is Dave Edmondson, the voice of Equine Affair. If you've attended Equine Affair, you've heard his voice. He has guided you through your day, reminded you about special events, and most importantly, he has been a witness to some of the most exciting moments in Equine Affair history. So let's welcome Dave to the show. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Allison.
So good to have you here and hear your very distinctive voice on the show.
it's good to talk to you, too.
Yeah. So, Dave, let's start out with kind of a fun question. How did you get involved in horses and the horse industry?
Well, my father was a horseman. And I think in part to please him and to sort of learn something about what he was, I was interested in horses. And eventually I went to farrier school. And I looked around. One of the things we did at farrier school was we sort of apprenticed for a day or a few days with veteran farriers. And all the men that I saw, none of them could stand up straight. None of them walked without a limp. And they all had gnarly hands. And I thought, you know, maybe I should find a less demanding line of work. So I went into music. I became a road musician and did that for most of 20 years. And partly I was already playing music and looking at those hands that had been bitten and otherwise, you know, kind of beaten up, made me think maybe it wouldn't be really good for my fiddle playing if I did that. So that's essentially it.
Okay, so you thought about being a farrier and then you decided, I think I'll go the musician route. And so then how did that transition into announcing? And how, kind of tell us how you started announcing for Equine Affair.
Well, as a musician, I learned a thing or two about microphones. And of course, everything is about, everything in communication is in some way or another about storytelling. I was sitting with Eugenia Snyder, the creator of Equine Affair, at a Fantasia. Now, in the first few years, I ran the and managed the seminar stage.
Okay.
And so in the evenings, I was free and sitting with Eugenia watching the Fantasia. And this was at the Ohio event. And the announcer, he was groggy. And he was slurring his words and he was having to kind of mumble and fumble around. And quite innocently, and I thought under my breath, but loud enough for Eugenia to hear, I said, "Good Lord, I could do better than that." And she turned and looked at me and said, "We're going to find out."
Oh, no.
And the next year, well, actually the next festival, the next event was in Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
And there I was.
And how was it? How did your first time go?
Well, you know, I'd like to think it went smoothly and perfectly, but I know it didn't. But I think I did adequately well. I think I did, you know, in part because of my affection and respect for Eugenia, I worked really hard at getting it right.
Right.
And because I can read on the fly, you know, I could read scripts that people would hand me minutes before I had to announce them and manage it tolerably well, then it seemed like I knew what I was doing. And after a couple of events, I think maybe I did know what I was doing.
Right. Right. So you kind of learned as you went along.
Well, of course.
Right.
And it was great fun to have this magnificent, you know, there I have this great sound system in the middle of a Coliseum. The Coliseum in Massachusetts is around 100 years old, kind of like the one at the Ohio State Fairgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't the greatest sound system in the world, but it was loud. And so I would bring recorded music to just kind of fill up the dead space, and had great fun doing that. Although my taste in music is a little different than the average, I think, person who's not into country music. And so, but I played a lot of, you know, classic country. Mm-hmm. And a lot of old time country, you know, fiddle tunes.
Yeah.
And then I discovered that Irish fiddle music and the rhythms of Irish fiddle music mirror the gaits of horses wonderfully well. So the jigs and reels went really well with the trot and the canter.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So then people who were doing breed demonstrations would ask, you know, would you play some of that music for me? And that got to be kind of a fun thing to do, to try to imagine what kind of music would go with which kind of horses.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I love that because, as I shared with you, I'm a daughter of musicians. I grew up in a musical family, and I was the only horse person in my family. So anytime I get to hear about how music and horses kind of mesh, I'm interested. So I think that's fabulous.
Well, and so then I was going to say, the biggest change, and the thing that actually made announcing more pleasant and almost even possible, was the discovery that I could record sponsor announcements.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know anything about digital recording, but you know, I figured it out. And I would record the announcements on CDs. Nowadays, nobody uses CDs anymore, but
right.
it's the same basic principle.
Right.
And so then, instead of having to make announcements while I was also announcing the Coliseum, meant that very often things got too frantic. Plus, I was talking all day long and my voice would get pretty tired.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually I learned to, like I said, with the recorded announcements, I was able to free up my time a little bit. And so I could concentrate more on doing the arena announcing.
Yeah.
That was kind of an interesting development.
Yeah. I bet that helped take some of the pressure off, because 4 days is a long time to talk, you
yes.
know, every day, all day for 4 days at an equine affair. That's a lot of words and a lot of talking. So how did you take care of your voice when you were announcing?
Well, mostly just rest it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a sip of strengthening medicine once in a while in the evening when my voice would be really raw.
Right.
That seemed to help a little bit.
Have you announced for other equine events, or has Equine Affair been your main equine announcing gig?
The only equine events I've ever announced are equine affairs. I was asked by several people who had local horse shows and whatnot if I would consider, what would I charge and that sort of thing. And I said, you know, no idea what the going rate is or anything of the sort. And in those days I was teaching
mm-hmm.
full time, and I didn't really have the time to traipse all over the place and announce horse shows. And so it worked out that the only one I ever did was Equine Affair.
Okay. And so what did you enjoy about it? I know you've talked a little bit about finding the music and all that, but what did you enjoy that you've been doing it for so many years, twice a year at our two events?
Well, I think the thing I enjoy about it most is it took me back. It strengthened a connection that I had with my father,
mm-hmm.
who was a horse guy. He, in his day, was in his county in Indiana, was reputed to be the best to break a troublesome horse. And he was lithe, small, you know, kind of a wiry guy. And so he could stay on the back of just about any horse. And so I heard those stories. I never saw him break horses, but I heard those stories. So there was that connection with my father. And also as an educator, I really admired some of the people I saw in the arena, many of them, who were fabulous teachers. First of all, they had to teach the horse, and then they had to teach the audience how they could teach a horse what they just witnessed. So those were the things that I enjoyed the most. I enjoyed the expo atmosphere, that everybody's running around, you know, selling something, giving things away, trying to attract attention. When there are 500 exhibitors, you have to have something to do to stand out so that people, you know, might just stop and notice you. And that sort of carny atmosphere always kind of appealed to me as well.
Yeah. There's a really enjoyable energy, especially when it's all horse people and you're a horse person. It's like, any better place in the world to be? I don't think so.
That's right. That's right. I remember a particular thing. It was, I think, the third year, and it was the last year we were at the smaller site in Dayton. Mm-hmm. And John Lyons and a guy named Richard Schrake, mm-hmm, had this, you wouldn't call it an argument, but they had a principal disagreement about the proper way to manage a troublesome horse. And Richard Schrake said that he used a twitch. Mm-hmm. And John Lyons said that he didn't think that was an acceptable device to use, and he didn't approve of it, and he'd found a way to work his way to solve these problems without inflicting that kind of pain on horses. Mm-hmm. And they kept going back and forth about it. So then there was in the seminar room, which probably seated about, I want to say, 150 people, and had a short stage, maybe, you know, 2 feet off, 2 feet above the floor. We must have had 300 people. And John Lyons and Richard Schrake talked this over in front of them. And it was so crowded, it was scary. You know, I'm not a claustrophobic, mm-hmm, person. Those kinds of things don't usually bother me, but it was just, and I thought, anything goes wrong, we've got trouble here.
Right.
this could get ugly in a hurry, mm-hmm, if somebody does something that caused any kind of a panic. And I remember looking out and saying, just before I introduced them, I said, now, you're horse people. You know how to behave in a pinch. You know how to behave. I'm really counting on you to keep this calm and easy. And that sort of tense energy went out of the room. It confirmed something that I'd always known about horse people. If you're in a tight spot, those are the kinds of people you want on your side. Because, mm-hmm, nobody who rides has not been in a tight spot. Mm-hmm. You've got to think quickly. You've got to be able to go with the event, whatever it is. The horse that never spooks suddenly is moving sideways towards something that looks kind of uncomfortable. You've got to have some sense of what to do. And most horse people are pretty good at that.
Right.
And they have that confidence.
Well, so what are some other memorable teachers or memorable teaching moments that you've witnessed over the years? What really stands out to you when you look back?
Well, I remember a couple of individuals. There was one fellow who used to be, was it Princess Anne's husband, Captain Mark Phillips? Okay. And he taught dressage, if I have it right. It was either that or it may have been jumping. It may have been 3-day eventing or something, mm-hmm, but it's a very precise thing to do. Mm-hmm. It requires counting, you know, thinking ahead. You know, he would teach you have to, the minute you cross the jump, it was jumping, you have to turn and look at the next objective.
Right.
And if you look at it, the horse will look at it. you know, and but the way he conducted this, the way he conducted this demonstration, I've never heard anybody speak so clearly and plainly. And his students went from being a little bit unsure of themselves to writing pretty confidently in the space of an hour.
Wow.
That was fun to see.
Yeah.
And there was a fellow, everybody walked around this guy like he was going to, you know, he might explode at any moment. And he had a really sharp tongue.
Mm-hmm.
And I was still doing the seminar stage in those days. And I looked at his script, and there was this, and I don't speak French more than just a little bit. I can get around a little bit. I know a couple of simple rules, but I don't have a really good grasp of French. And there was this title. He was, and I later learned it's pronounced Chef d'Equipe for the U.S. team,
mm-hmm.
the Olympic team or the Pan American team, whichever it was. And I said, how do you say this? So I hunted up somebody who did speak French and said, pronounce this for me. Okay, fine. And so then I introduced him and announced him as the chef to keep. And he interrupted me. He said, you're the first person here who's actually pronounced that right. And so, you know, a little preparation does a little good.
It does. It really does. You should do your homework. That's what that means.
And I also remember Monty Roberts. He had this routine that he did. And I must have seen 30 or 40 of his demonstrations, where he would take a rank unbroke horse, put it in a round pen, go through his things. One of my favorite ones was he would say, when a horse puts his head down to the ground and acts like he's grazing, he called that licking and chewing,
mm-hmm.
then you know it's relaxed enough, you could maybe take your next step and whatever it is you're trying to teach it. If it doesn't ever relax, you can't teach it anything.
Mm-hmm.
And he had this little dummy that he would strap on a horse's back and let it buck around until it got tired, trying to shake this dummy out of the saddle, which was always pretty hilarious looking.
Mm-hmm.
And then once that was done, he'd have some, a young fella, you know, because Monty wasn't getting in the horses anymore. He was too old. You know, and in an hour's time, he would take an unbroke horse, have it under saddle and bridle, riding around, you know, following cues, doing, you know, stopping, going, backing, turning, side passing, maybe on a really good day. And I was kind of impressed with that. I thought it was very, very interesting.
Yeah. Well, you've seen a lot. You've seen so many years of Equine Affair, and you've been there and you've watched the changes happen, or you've watched the learning occur, and you've seen these teachers demonstrate and exhibit their talents, not only with horses, but with people. If you could look back and say, this is what I've enjoyed the most about this event, what would it be?
I would say some of the really good demonstrations, arena demonstrations, would be pretty close to the top. I also had enjoyed some pretty wonderful moments at the Fantasias.
Yes. Yep.
Have you ever seen a Fantasia, perhaps film of one?
Yes, I've been to several so far.
Oh, you've been to several?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so then you know what they're about.
I do.
And to some extent, they're just people writing really well.
Mm-hmm.
And to some extent, they're a little show busy, you know, that everybody puts glitter on their, not everybody, but people do put glitter on their horses, and they get into costumes and they try to tell a little story with what they're doing.
Yeah.
And the dressage riders ride these magnificent warm bloods in perfect time to whatever music. You know, they've obviously rehearsed it forever and ever.
Right.
It's just wonderful to watch. I've enjoyed some of the Liberty shows where just beautiful horses running around in an arena and then following cues, you know, with just with a wave of a riding crop or whip, you know, they look like fish swimming in a school.
Yeah.
And so the visual, some of the visuals from the Fantasia are things that I'll always remember.
Definitely. As you describe that, I'm thinking about, I think it was Silvia Zerbini's performance last year with all those gray horses,
yes,
just running at liberty. And then with a flick of her wrist, you know, they would turn all in all in order. And it was just stunning.
Yeah, I agree. And that's, so those are the things that I remember. And the teachers, you know, John Lyons, I admired his teaching. He used a character that was apparently genuine, mm-hmm, as a way of communicating.
Yeah.
And I thought he did some really wonderful stuff, and he taught people humane horsemanship.
So kind of getting, I guess, towards the end of our show now, we're almost out of time, but I wanted to share with our audience that you are retiring, which is partly why you're our guest of honor, but share with us, what are you planning to do now? You're not going to announce for us anymore. So what are your big adventures?
Well, these days, of course, when nobody can go anywhere,
mm-hmm.
I've been gardening, like, you know, vegetable gardening.
Oh yeah.
So this year I created about 8 or 9 raised beds and built a cage to keep the squirrels off of the tomatoes.
Of course.
And, We had our best garden ever. We are still harvesting green beans. That's about all. And we have a few peas left. Mm-hmm. Everything else is pretty much done. We had frost about a week ago, I guess. And so that slowed everything down. And of course, peppers and tomatoes don't like cold weather anyhow.
Right.
So so there's gardening. I'm still playing music. And of course, that's gotten to be really hard to do lately because,
yes,
mm-hmm, nobody's hosting musical gatherings.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm working on restoring banjos and learning new fiddle tunes and just sort of keeping a hand in there. My brother, who is an absolute fiend, drags me to the golf course, usually no more than once a week.
Oh, okay.
And I used to be a pretty good golfer. I have lost the touch. I can still work pretty well around the green, but I've really got to get a lesson again to play very well. I still have a good time, but it's, mm-hmm, but I'm not playing very well. And my wife, Beth, loves to cook. And I kind of like to cook myself.
Wonderful.
So yeah. Those are things. My father was the best cook at our house when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
My mother cooked because she had to. And her idea of a good vegetable was to cook it until it had no resistance left.
No.
So I was in my 20s and visiting hippie friends who were vegetarians before I ever decided that vegetables were actually pretty good.
Yes. The key is don't overcook the vegetables and they have flavor.
It's an Anglo thing, I'm pretty sure. Or maybe German. My mother suffered from both cuisines.
Oh, I see. Well, I think cooking and gardening go hand in hand. So I think, yes, that's really, yeah, good. You can garden and then cook what you produce.
That's it.
Well, thank you for all your years of service to Equine Affair. I know that next year, when we're hoping to all get together again, that we're going to miss your voice. And so we just, on behalf of Equine Affair, thank you for sharing your talents with us. And we wish you the best of luck in retirement, Dave.
Well, you're very nice. You're very nice to say that. Thank you. Thank you for the kind words. I've enjoyed doing it. I have not gotten around to saying how many great members of the Equine Affair staff I've worked with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, dedicated, capable people.
Definitely.
Who've taken care of me, you know, when I'm 500 miles from home, yeah, sometimes. And I appreciate them all.
Thanks for joining us for the official Equine Affair podcast. I'm your host, Allison Renborg. Equine Affair gratefully acknowledges its sponsors, Absorbine, U.S. Equestrian, Rods, Farnham, Cosequin, Neutrina, Cashman's, Horizon Structures, and GGT Footing. We hope you'll join us for Equine Affair in Ohio on April 8th through the 11th, 2021, at the Ohio Expo Center in Columbus, Ohio. We're also excited to be back at the Eastern States Exposition in West Springfield, Massachusetts, on November 11 through 14, 2021. You can buy tickets, see the full event schedules, and all the latest news at equineaffair.com. And finally, catch up on all our past podcast episodes online by visiting wdlrradio.com/equine-affair.